Hi, everybody. Ben Starr here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we have an interesting guest for you, indeed. Before we get to that, I'd want to say hello to Kevin O'Donohue here in the studio, as always.
Hey, Ben Starr.
At the Positive Mind Center on West 57th Street. And thank you for all your feedback and those of you who have sent us emails, including Rebecca, Jeff, and others. We are going to be responding to most of that mail today. So thanks as always. You can contact us at positivemind@wbai.org. And those of you who have been listening to The Positive Mind for a while now, you may remember today's guest from a program we did in January about refugees. We have with us today Dr. Christian Enescu, who fled communist Romania in the 1980s with the Romanian secret police on his tail the whole way. Dr. Enescu, welcome back.
Thank you for having me today, Ben, Kevin.
Yes, it's great to have you. And, you know, speaking of positive mind and keeping a good outlook and a positive attitude, Dr. Enescu is one of the most energetic, positive people I know. He's one of our colleagues here at the Positive Mind Center. And he's like a horse. I mean, he's a ball of energy. He's going constantly on the move. I mean, he's just full of energy, and it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, Dr. Enescu.
Thank you very much, man.
We all want what he's having.
Exactly. And just to reintroduce you, Dr. Enescu, you are an integrative neurologist, and your work deals with the brain and the study of the brain, the science of the brain, and how people can improve their lives by getting a better understanding of their brains and how they can improve their brain function. It's all really fascinating stuff, and we talk a lot about how the brain and the heart are connected, and you look at how the brain and the mental health is connected to all the other nodes of health that we experience, whether it's emotional health or physical health. And you've told us about how there's such a major correlation between someone's brain health and the overall health of their physical body and their physical well-being. And you stressed that, so to speak, you stressed that stress in and of itself is one of the greatest, has one of the greatest effects on our physical health. So tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely, yes, that's correct. The stress is poorly understood by humans usually. It has three components, very clear components. First component is stress is a fight or flight response, and you either fight a dog or jump a fence. So in this state, the body does three things. First of all, it's going to create a vasoconstriction or a lower caliber of the blood vessels in the internal organs in the body.
So vasoconstriction is when the blood vessels shrink.
By shrinking blood vessels, allowing less blood and oxygen and nutrients to those organs are affected. So the body doesn't care its functions if you have to fight for your life. For this reason, it's going to block the proper function of that organ to take care of the surroundings. Okay.
So what you're saying is when people are mentally or psychologically stressed out, it actually constricts their blood vessels, which reduces the flow of blood to the brain.
To the brain also, but first let's talk to the organs first. First organ is pancreas. The pancreas is the first organ to be hit by stress. That's why diabetes is rampant these days. People don't make the connection between stress and pancreas. So the blood flow to that organ is affected markedly, and that's why the stress causes, among other things, diabetes. So if the stress is prolonged in your life, then the more organs are affected, becoming sick. So that's why you have to understand the stress has to be addressed immediately. Second thing that has to be mentioned here is that stress is causing a drop in the immune system.
Can I interrupt a second? Sure. So when somebody goes to a doctor and the doctor says, you know, you have onset diabetes, will the doctor address the stress in the person's life? And should they?
Never, ever is addressed by doctors. We are not prepared to deal with these things in our practice. We are being trained to understand the organ function and treatments, which are medications and procedures, but we're not addressing the emotionality of our patients at all.
And you would say that that is really what distinguishes your practice, is that you take a client and you try to locate what is causing them stress, what is throwing their system off.
It's correct, Kevin. You are correct. My first appointment in my practice with a patient is at least 1 hour.
Yeah.
The discussion is extensive.
Wow.
Why? Because I need to know about the patient, how he thinks, he emotes, his life circumstances, and I can address those too. And I educate my patients to what they can do for themselves, and not only what I can do for them, which is very troubling for them.
So right now is one of the most stressful times of year for so many people out there. I mean, we talk about it every winter, every November, December. This is an incredibly stressful and hectic time of year. What with the holidays, the schedule, everything kind of gets ramped up in December. Everyone's trying to crunch in a lot of activity into a short window of time because mm-hmm. the holidays are coming up. People are going away. It's very hectic in every office and workplace, you know, in the city and probably the country. And the reduced sunlight, it affects people in a variety of ways. So it's a very difficult time for a lot of people out there. And we spoke about basic remedies that people can take on their own, easy steps that people can affect in their own lives to reduce that stress level, starting with food and diet was the first one that you wanted to talk about. Can you tell us what else you recommend?
Well, before we do that, I just wanted to hear the second and the third thing. You mentioned there's three aspects of this. So one is the constriction of the blood vessels. But I think you're right. I think we do need to get to how to relieve these things, but I think background's important. So you say the constriction of the blood vessels. And yes, this is an incredibly stressful time of year. I feel and it's mostly psychological, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, physically, exactly. We're not under so much duress, but it's the expectations from the outside world and that we've incorporated into ourselves about this season.
That's
that
correct.
Causes the stress.
Absolutely.
So I can feel my vasoconstriction going on, you know, pretty much every day in December. But what are the other two?
The second, correct, Kevin. Sorry. Thank you. Second component is the immune system, which goes down because of the body doesn't pay attention to any infection, a cold or something, but wants to take care of its life, you know, to preserve life. So the jump of fence, fight a dog, for instance. Okay. So you are exposed much more likely to these infections, autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis or diabetes, autoimmune disease also other neurological conditions and other conditions which are dependent on the integrity of the immune system. So if the stress, again, is long, then the immune system is having a continuous low function and the sickness can ensue.
So we know that stress, first of all, constricts our blood vessels, mm-hmm. which reduces the blood flow and oxygen to our various vital organs. And now we know, you've told us, that stress will also hamper our immune systems. And
absolutely.
What's the third effect?
The third effect is on the brain itself. The it's a slow caliber, a constriction of the blood vessels in the cortical areas of the brain, which are responsible for our cognitive functions, higher functions, calculations, abstract thinking, judgment, for instance.
Yeah,
reasoning.
We talked about that last week, the frontal cortex. It's frontal right cortex, up in the frontal lobe of the brain.
And the dilatation of the blood vessels inside the hindbrain, which are responsible for our instant reaction. For instance, we don't think of just we jump the fence without thinking too much. So if I'm an owner of a business, for instance, give an example. If I give my employees under stress, I lose money basically because patients will not people will not function at their best business. So I lose money. I have to keep them happy. Okay, businesses that are really good, people are happy. They come and bring their energies, their positivity at the business, and the business grows tremendously.
And we've seen a lot of businesses on the cutting edge implementing all sorts of amenities for their employees based on your philosophy that you just mentioned right there.
Correct.
They want to keep their employees feeling comfortable, happy, and stress-free. So I think it's an interesting point.
Very good.
So what do you do with a client that comes in? First of all, you give them an hour of your time. How many MDs give an hour of their time?
I don't know, one-on-one to
find out the emotional condition of their clients. But so you come up with this. Is that one of the first questions you ask? What causes stress in your life?
Well, the first question is for us to find out from the patients what symptoms the patient has, you know, and then I try to get to the core of the problem, and then I give them some advice. So First of all, patients are exposed to information about how can improve their life, absolutely, but have to analyze first the cause of the disease itself, because it's a multiple. There are multiple causes of disease. You know, first of all, there are physical causes of disease, like a cut, for instance, surgical cuts, and trauma to the body itself, or poisons. Food poisoning is extremely important, but there are other conditions in medicine which are not related to any immediate trauma, for instance, immediate injury. They are more subtle. Those things have to be addressed from a different angle. Okay, so that's why it's important to find out the patient's lifestyle, what they do. First of all, it's absolutely involving the food and habits. Food has to be healthy food, and the sleep has to be mandatory addressed. All my patients,
so
very few.
So you do ask people, how do you sleep at night?
Absolutely, yes. Very few people in my practice are sleeping well. So when I ask the question, when are you falling asleep? Well, 12, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, you know, it's a choice. I say, listen, you have to understand very clearly that I tell you some things in my office to address you, to help you the best I can. But you have to come up with something yourself, you know, to understand what you can do for yourself. Mm-hmm. And we meet halfway. So you have to show to yourself that you want to get better, physically better, by addressing the food, the sleep habits. First of all, if you understand the sleep biorhythms, it's very clear. If we sleep after midnight, we are blocking certain release of chemicals and hormones in the body, which are being released only if you are soundly asleep before midnight, like growth hormone, for instance.
Really?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So if we don't sleep properly, we get ourselves sick. Absolutely correct. You know, so
I know I'm much more susceptible to stress when I don't sleep well.
You
know,
we all are.
Or if I'm chronically under, you know, not rested enough, and chronically so, that my immune system goes down and I start to feel those like swollen glands or different types of
yes, and we get colds and all kinds of sicknesses that we are not supposed to have, you know, otherwise. So we are supposed to function best in the daytime when the sun is out, light is outside, okay, and rest and reboot our bodies at nighttime when it's more magnetism and other factors which are involved, leading us to a better health of the physical body. This is the first step to address in a certain sickness. But what about those conditions?
I was going to say, so you're an MD that cares.
Well, I do care. Do you know what happened to me? I was labeled as integrative neurologist. I didn't know I was
what
one.
What is that?
Well, you know, I looked at it afterwards when somebody told me, oh, you're an integrative one. What do you mean by that? So, well, what I do know, as opposed to holistic neurology, holistic neurologists or practitioners are those who are involving, for instance, other means like acupuncture, homeopathy, Reiki, energy healing, and all these things, which are more they're further from the medical establishment, from the medical field. But I, in my practice, why I use the word integrative, because I use standard neurology procedures, evaluations, testing, and the treatments, okay, to which I add something extra. What I chose to add in my practice were the first of all the latest discoveries in neuroscience. I do a lot of research, and I have two neuroscience center collaborations. One center allows me to use a diagnostic tool which is called brain mapping, which is one of the best tools to assess the brain function, which shows up in colors eventually. The colors appear by plotting the information we harvest from the patient's brain through an EEG machine against a wall of normal individuals of the same sex, handedness, and age.
Now, is this a big square metal box? Or I mean, is this like you have
well,
to,
it's
like
a
the old style computers?
It's a
from
cap.
the '60s. I mean, what? How is this thing easy to put on?
Yes.
How do people do this?
Well, we place a cap with 19 electrodes on patients' okay. heads, and we record the brain waves. Then that we record everything, and we have a neuroscience center that gives us.
You can do that right here in your office.
Right here in my office, and it's a great tool. Okay, so this is one tool I use as an addition to my neurology, which is still neurology. It's a little bit up a notch from the regular neurology. Another one is.
Just briefly tell us what this test will do for people.
Okay, the test will show me in colors, for instance, any brain dysfunction, for instance, previous brain traumas that are important to know we can do. Cognition problems, brain can be underpowered brain, we call it, okay, showing only blue, for instance, or anxiety, depression. expression of certain patterns which are we are aware of and are clearly showing that patients are depressed. ADHD is a major one. Some kids are labeled with ADHD when they don't have it, you know, so...
So you'll put this cap on somebody who has been diagnosed as ADHD, and it will say,
exactly,
no, you don't have ADHD, but you might have some depression somewhere.
Well,
or you might have some cognition issues.
And I have some tools, some solutions for that particular person, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. So the EEG stands for electroencephalograph.
Yes.
And that is a measurement of the brain's activity, right?
That's correct.
Now, how would that be different from, say, an MRI or a CAT scan?
Well, MRI shows the magnetic field is different. CAT scan is it's an image, a radiologic image. So it's not, this is a functional test.
Uh-huh.
Another one would be, for instance, a comparison with a functional MRI, for instance. Okay, it's a different one. Okay, maybe SPECT scan would be also a closer one.
You're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. Our guest today is Dr. Christian Enescu, a neurologist who studies a lot of links between the brain and the body, and including the link between mental health and physical health, between brain chemistry and our overall physical well-being. You know, we saw an interesting study, Dr. Enescu, out of the United Kingdom, where they gave people who were participating in the study a very difficult mental task to do, whether it was a test or a memory game. It was a very mentally strenuous test. And then these were people who were physically active people. Then they sent them out to go exercise. And they found that these people, after they completed a difficult mental activity, they were much quicker to reach physical exhaustion in their exercise, which was one of the links that they were able to establish between mental and physical well-being. On top of that, they found that in elderly adults, that people who were more physically fit had better spatial memory and certain regions of their brain were actually bigger. So there's a clear link between mental health and physical well-being. You told us about having a good diet, about having a healthy sleep schedule. What's another thing that people can do today, starting today at home, that can improve their physical and mental well-being?
Before we continue that, let me give you another example of what you just said. Harvard example, okay, when the people were analyzed, three groups were taken to train the forearm muscles, for instance, and one group was supposed to be doing only muscle training with forearm muscles for 12 weeks, 1 hour a day. Second group was asked to do it only in their minds, not physically at all.
That's
third
my,
group is fantastic.
That's the way I like to do it.
Okay, and and then the third group was asked to do both physically half hour and the mind half hour. The results were absolutely mind-boggling. People who did it mentally and those who did it physically were totally the same. It's unbelievable. It's if you are in bed, if you are paralyzed in bed. Give an example, very powerful. If you are paralyzed in bed after a stroke. God forbid, have a stroke, okay. And you cannot move on one arm. Please do not forget about your arm. Do in your mind eye the exercise that you would do normally with your right hand or left hand or left body, you know.
Wow.
And then you have the same success as if you are doing it physically.
Mm.
It's very important to understand that. Very important, okay. If you do it physically and mentally, it's even better. Do physical therapy,
sure.
Okay.
So that part of the brain that would have atrophied because of absence of use of the arm, if you're using your brain to imagine doing the exercises, then the brain won't atrophy in that area.
So this, absolutely, and this leads us to the conclusion that life itself, the body, life itself is a mind game, actually. It's just a very important issue to understand. So I'd like to speak about a little bit about this physical body. How come a disease is happening in patients, you know, and what we can do about it? So I want to make sure to understand that I want to give practical advice
yes.
to patients,
yeah.
you know, what can I do about this, you know, and to give a real true hope, not only just wishful thinking.
Right.
So, okay, so let's go a little bit to quantum physics, not too much. I'm not a physicist. I don't want to stay too long on this. But we have to start from here to understand the nature of our physical body. Okay. The quantum physics tells us very clearly that if we divide this table in front of me here or any object in this 3D life, okay, 3D reality, to the smallest particles, at the subatomic level, quark level, there is only space. There is no matter. It's only space. How come I see these things here around me very solid? If I bang my head against a wall, I get a bruise. Okay, so this is important to understand. And second, it's the well-known experiment of double split experiment, which shows us the continuous interchange between wave and particle forms. An atom has electrons around it. Okay, the electrons are not in a specific place or position if they are not observed from the outside. So from that wave form, when they are potentially in a certain position, they become a particle, becoming a reality if they are observed from outside with a certain intention of the observer. So this body, let me get to physical body, and of course I'm a doctor, I have to get back to it. Physical body is in a potential state of health or sickness. If we observe our physical body with certain intention of looking at it as if it's healthy or sick, we get the same result, we get these results. So if I look at my body with fear and it's sick, and I enhance these thoughts in my mind, the body will show me continuously what I thought. So the body is basically a multifaceted, be very careful about that now, multifaceted, dynamic mirroring of what's happening in our mind and emotions.
So if you're walking around saying that I'm sick, or I feel sick, I'm depressed, I'm anxious, I never feel right, I never feel good, I never feel all right, chances are your body is going to feel that.
Absolutely
and
correct.
Be influenced by that.
Yeah.
So would you say that a hypochondriac is more likely to actually experience illness than someone who's not?
Absolutely. He will make it real. It will make it become, it's a mind game here. The more you focus your attention on your life on something, it expands. That's their law. There are two laws of perception in this life. The first law of life is very clear. I see this table here because I believe it's here. I see this body, healthy or sick, because I believe it's healthy or sick. And the second law would be, I believe the body is sick or healthy because I want it to be like this. So I have an intention, I look at the body in a certain way, the body will reflect back to me my intention. And this is, I have to do something, a very important aspect here. People confuse, they don't know what intention is. They tell me, hey, doc, I don't want to be sick. I want to be healthy. Yes, but intention equals focused attention. So these people do not grasp fully, equals focused attention. So if I focus on my body in a certain way, okay, my focused attention is equal with an intention from my side.
So Armand DeMille had its acronym that he loved called GITNIP, right? Good in practice, not...
Good in theory, not in practice.
Good in theory, not in practice. Mm-hmm. And I love your message, but the thing is, what about the person who has a bad sleep schedule, an unhealthy diet, you know, they smoke, they drink, and they're mentally not, you know, very negative. Is it possible for that person, through simple, you know, visualization and thoughts, to turn that around? Or does there have to be, as you said, an intention, a real intention?
Well, I have to tell you right up front, a person will be able to quit smoking, quit drinking, quit drugs, or get physically healthy if he truly wants to be healthy. Okay, this is very important to understand. So they come to my office with an intention to get better. They are troubled by their situation. They want to get better. That's what I can advise them. They will listen to what I tell them. If I just grab somebody on the street like I did some time, I'll tell you an example. It's an unbelievable example. They don't get better. So they have to have an intention. I was in a DMV place, okay, having to replace they have a duplicate of my driver's license.
The Department of Motor Vehicles.
Exactly, yeah. And there are 50 people in line and waiting for an hour.
Only
there.
50.
50, yes. So, here comes a lady, an old lady, who in 2 minutes told all of us how sick she was, that her fibromyalgia was acting out that day. It was impossible to control the pain. So in 2 minutes, we all knew about her problems, you know. So I tried, as I always do, I never give up on patients. I always try to help them, you know, wherever I am. It doesn't matter if you're in my office or on the street somewhere.
And that's our job.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So I try to help this lady. I try to explain her, you know, listen, can you listen to a little bit to let you know that you are doing much worse for yourself than you think, you know. First question was, are you a doctor? Well, I'm a doctor and I deal with this on a daily basis, I said. I try to explain her that the brain has a certain opioid in structures called beta endorphin being released at our demand. It's the most powerful opioid that exists on the planet itself. So
our brain is naturally producing painkillers.
Absolutely, yes, exactly. See, there's a problem with the medical establishment. We are giving patients opioids, Percocet, Vicodin, all these things, okay, when we have our own manufactured beta endorphin, okay? So it's very powerful, but it's being released at our demand. What is our demand? Our demand is I feel good, and one very important step, to believe in it. If you are not using emotion and believing in it, you don't accomplish anything.
What happened with this lady?
Okay, this lady, well, as you can easily imagine, she was extremely well programmed by other physicians before me.
Yeah.
And I had to give up, you know, definitely. I realized that I have to stop. Just imagine, Kevin, you're at the DMV line, and all of a sudden you have to listen to a discussion about health, about mind, body, and the essence of life itself, and the nature of disease. Right. You know, I have to stop doing this.
You know, but we often find this in psychology and therapy, that people come in and they say, "I want to be better. I don't want to be depressed. I don't want to be anxious."
Yeah.
You know, but in some way, they're perpetuating it. They don't want to give it up. It clings to them. You know, and it takes a lot of undoing, whatever it is. It takes a lot of undoing to convince them. Or to show that, hey, there is a reason I'm hanging on to this. Yes, it does eventually become something that they say, okay, I think I can let this go. But it takes time. It's not enough to just say, you're saying you don't want this, but part of you is hanging on to it.
And do you know what this is, Kevin? Because if somebody tells me, hey, Doc, I don't want to be sick. I want to be healthy, okay? And how can you say I want to be sick? I don't say that. But you want to be healthy only with 7% of your mind, which is the conscious mind. Okay, the rest, 93%, is your subconscious mind, which is not under your control. Okay, so you have to understand that it's hard to address your subconscious mind being reprogrammed from before, from early childhood, and then to reprogram it to give you health and wellness. Okay, very important to understand that. And also, I have ways, of course, to advise patients in this area of subconscious mind, addressing patients' subconscious mind, and how to be reprogrammed. We are being reprogrammed on a continuous basis by commercials, ads. We are exposed to approximately 800 reprogramming devices every single day. 800.
Yeah. And so is part of your goal, obviously, part of your goal is to make people more conscious, to be less, 93%. I mean, can you bring it up to 20% conscious awareness?
We can bring it up a lot more, because we can show people how to reprogram the subconscious mind.
Okay.
I was trained with this, and I know.
I guess when we come back.
Yes,
come
I'd
back,
love to yes. hear okay. More about that after the break, talking about reprogramming our conscious mind, mm-hmm. or our subconscious mind, rather.
Yes.
It's brilliant stuff. I'm Ben Starr, here with Kevin O'Donohue and Dr. Kristen Enescu, our guest neurologist here at the Positive Mind Center. So, you have been listening to the first half of our program today. We are going to be taking a short musical break, and we will be back after
this. Calls.
Stay tuned.
Won't be long, things gonna change. sometime in the middle of the night. I get so lonely, so lonely, so lonely. They ain't gonna change, they ain't gonna change. Change, change, change. They ain't gonna change. Further on up the road, baby. They ain't gonna change. Change, change, change. Change, change, change. Time now, baby. But after a while, it's gonna be my time, baby. They ain't gonna change. Change, change, change. Change, change, change. They ain't gonna change. Yes, it is.
Lee Hooker and Carlos Santana here on WBAI. Chill out. Things gonna change. You know, there's something about Carlos Santana's guitar. You hear one note and you just know it's him. It's amazing. You are listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI. I'm here with Kevin O'Donohue, our guest, Christian Inescu, a neurologist here, one of our colleagues at The Positive Mind Center. I'm Ben Starr. We're talking about health, neurological health, and it's important to note that health is not just the absence of disease or sickness. It's not just that there's nothing wrong, right? Health is a state of total mental and physical and emotional and spiritual and social well-being. And that's why we like talking to people like Dr. Inescu, who are able to give us a window into the world of neurological health and how that relates to the rest of the body. So I want to thank you again for joining us today, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Those of you who are interested in hearing more about Dr. Inescu, you can check through the archives from this January. He was on a program that we did about refugees and the psychology and mentality of refugees, and you can check that out on our archives at thepositivemind.com. As always, you can send us an email at positivemind@wbai.org, and you can always help us cut down on the frequency and the lengths of future fund drives by going to WBAI.org and clicking on Ways to Donate and becoming a BAI buddy in support of The Positive Mind. Dr. Inescu, we wanted to talk about how people can take control of their mental and physical health starting today. You gave us a few examples in the first half of the show, but give our listeners some really concrete steps that they can take starting today on how they can take control of their mental health and their neurological health.
Very good point. We are very practical here. We want to give you practical advice to take home, and that's why we want to be focused on what ideas we can give you to improve your life. So first of all, of course, we have to address the lowest possible level, which is the nutrition. There are many, many programs for good nutrition, and of course, we have to avoid, obviously, what we know is toxic for us to eat, for instance. Fried food, anything, you know, and to eat only what is good for us to eat, for instance. Brain food, in my field of neurology, it's a lot of importance. It's very important to get foods containing many amino acids, because one of the most important reason of brain sickness, and also in psychiatry, many conditions are because of imbalanced brain neurotransmitters. Okay, so the foods, the amino acids are important because they can create, for instance, proper levels of serotonin and dopamine. Okay, and without these proper levels, we get sick. So we have to get to the right foods, right proteins, and avoid what we know is toxic for us, like caffeine, for instance.
So somebody comes to you depressed, which is lowered serotonin levels, you're going to ask them, what are they eating?
Absolutely. The depression can be caused also by the low dopamine levels. Of course, the food is crucially important, okay? So it's very important to know what they eat and to advise them, to guide them to taking the proper foods. Give an example. The turkey has tryptophan in it. Yeah. Tryptophan creates 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan creates serotonin. Give an example, just an example. There are many, many examples.
Maybe that's why people love Thanksgiving so much.
Of course, they get more serotonin, they get happier.
But then they fall asleep. that's another story.
This serotonin will make melatonin, of course.
So what's an example of a great dinner that I should make myself tonight? Should I have turkey as my protein? And what are some brain food vegetables I could throw in there?
Well, there are very many vegetables that we can eat. For instance, avocados are very good. You have to keep in mind that nervous system and the brain is 70% fat. Do not fall into the belief that fat is bad for you. Very important to understand. Sweets, carbs are bad for us. Fat is excellent for us. If we deprive people from fat, their nervous system goes down. They become more depressed. They are unable to repair their nervous system, the brain. Yeah. Fat is good for us.
So you would be an advocate for a carb-free diet instead of a fat-free diet?
Fat-free is, for me, is nonsense. I wouldn't even go further. Okay, but carb food diet, carbs should be very little, just fructose maybe, not refined sugars. By all means, avoid all sodas of any kind. No aspartame, of course, which is brain toxic, affects the dopamine system. And caffeine is not good. I know there are a lot of commercials claiming caffeine is good for you, 4 or 5 cups a day. It's a disaster for the brain. Don't do that. Disaster for the brain. Mm. Okay, so let your brain have the proper natural foods that it needs. Avocado is good. Coconut is good, for instance. I don't promote here eat lard, for instance, or pork fried fat. You know, I don't do that. No, but good fats are good for you, for instance. Okay, you can, of your choice, you'll find the wines. And carbohydrates should be fruits mainly. Bread should be very, very little. I don't eat bread too much. Grains are not very healthy for us. I don't know. Some people don't tolerate. They have more and more wheat intolerance, more and more celiac disease. Celiac sprue is rampant now.
Have you read that book, Grain Brain?
Yes, of course.
What do you
David
think of
Perlmutter. Well, he knows the stuff. He knows it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. He screams at people who take fat-free stuff, or even statins are lowering the fat. People come to my office with a low, for instance, low cholesterol. How low? I don't know. The doctor knows. Well, what is good for him is not good for me, maybe. The level was 129, give an example of cholesterol. And cholesterol 129 is a disaster for the brain. Even the cardiologist will scream because they don't address the brain at all. And the statins were not proven to be extremely useful in preventing heart disease, preventing strokes, or even prolonging life. So they have to be very carefully given to patients who really need statins. Okay. So fat is good for you. Carbs are not good for you. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and so that's diet.
Right, and then you mentioned sleep, being in bed and actually asleep by midnight.
Sleep is absolutely important. So, Doc, they told me all the time, I cannot sleep at 10 o'clock as you suggest, because all my life I worked as a shift worker, and I was in a place where I slept only from 2 a.m., and I do the same now at age 70. So, well, it's a bad choice. Does it mean that you cannot change the body? The brain needs at least 1 month to change its biorhythms. You have to know that very clearly. You can change all can change. Nothing is written in stone. You have to get to have the mind, the brain, used to sleeping late, earlier.
So you don't accept no.
No, no.
Even
way.
By an 80-year-old
no,
person.
We can't
no.
change. Listen.
You came to see me to get better. I'm telling you what you can do. And if you don't do it, you're not going to get better. So
No. It's not like this. No. Of course, I respect their level of understanding of
no,
life.
No, but I mean it as a good thing. To tell them, you know, you're never too old to change.
Absolutely.
And you can change within a month's time.
Crucial.
Okay, it's not going to happen overnight.
Right. It takes 30 days to establish
a new pattern. A new pattern, yes, exactly. Okay.
30 days of daily adherence to...
You stick to the schedule. Don't give up. Don't give up. Doesn't matter. No cell phones, no computer, no TV in the bedroom, by the way. Out of the bedroom.
And
TV.
I mean, we train children to sleep. I mean, yes, you don't alter it if you're a parent to change the because the kid can't sleep tonight. You say no. We're setting a schedule. We're putting you to sleep at 9 every night, and we're not going to waver on that.
Exactly. You know? Yeah.
So it's taking control of your child when you're the caretaker, but taking control of yourself when you're the grown up. So you say diet, sleep, physical activity.
Yes. Okay, and then, of course, you have to have a new attitude in life. This is a major, major issue people do not address usually.
A positive mind.
Positive mind, exactly. We are here the positive mind, obviously, you know, and we have to fill big shoes of Armandy Mills' 35 years of experience in advising people how to think positively, you know. This is an approach we can also address very clearly and very practically. We have to analyze our areas of our life where we see tension of some kind, and the tension has to be addressed, even if it's a family member, maybe, a family issue, or a financial issue, or a work issue. We have to address the proper way to address it is to face it and discuss it. Do not leave it just to float there by itself, because it will affect your life profoundly. Of course, the connection between mind, brain, and the body is this. First of all, the thoughts and emotions are affecting your brain chemistry, your body chemistry, and the body chemistry affecting the brain neurophysiology. And we can check it with Evoke Neuroscience. We do it brain mapping and QEGs all the time.
I mean, it's proven, right?
It's proven, yes.
People
exactly,
with
yeah.
serious mental health conditions are going to be at a higher risk of experiencing physical conditions.
Absolutely.
And,
correct,
and we've seen that time and time again.
We advise people to get all the time to approach, and that's why my appointment first time is extremely long, because I need to know exactly details. I have a patient, to give you an example, who was a journalist, a writer, a prominent figure in his community. He was a meditator for 40 years of a certain type of meditation, and he got sick with a chronic degenerative neurological condition. How come you got sick? I asked him. I asked also some pastors, ministers, priests, reverends, you know, all kind of stuff I do. And he told me, I don't know. So I analyzed his life together with him. What he was doing actually, which is mind-boggling, he was involved in certain lawsuits against a certain government, was outside this country, and he always won the lawsuits because the government was diverting money from environmental purposes to their pockets. And he was always winning. But so he spent time in court of law every single day almost, but arguing with people, and he always won. What was the price? His sickness. He was diverted from the state of peace that meditation gives you
right.
to an
he
area
was in
of
an
negativity.
Almost perpetual conflict.
Exactly.
In
yeah.
his life.
Exactly. He
and
was
that
very
conflict
intelligent.
Manifested itself in his physical health.
Exactly. A hit in his body. It's just mind-boggling stuff. I told him, listen, you have to. Your coming to me has a meaning. It's not only just to tell you what to do, but you know what to do. Get yourself to be aware of what how you spend your time thinking. Okay, you can choose your time thinking positively or peacefully or negatively.
And by the way, the converse is also true, right? People who are experiencing these chronic physical conditions are going to be more apt to develop, you know, difficulties mentally, mental health.
They're hopeless. These people, they lose their hope, honestly. You know, I see it all the time, and it's worse and worse. The hopelessness, helplessness, they decide, they depend on somebody else as a doctor to help their problem. Okay, it's a lot of anger around there. You know, the anger is going to get you much worse because it leads to a lot of body imbalance. You know, so it's very important to understand. You have to get to be at peace and forgive. Well, forgiveness is very, very poorly understood these days.
Mm.
Let me tell you why is that so. Give an example. You injured me. This current discourse. You injured me, and I'm a living proof of your sin. You injured me, okay? And but because I'm the better of the two, I forgive you. I forgive you my hurt. Gentlemen, this is not forgiveness. this is the most vicious attack on the human mind, on the human beings. Why? Because it's making the patients, the people feel guilty. It's a guilt infliction in that second, because the cause of the injury is gone. The cause is gone. The effects are still present in my injury, in my body. So the effects cannot be changed because the cause is gone. To change the effects of something, you have to address the cause. And the cause is past, and the effects, you see them as present. That's why the only forgiveness which is true forgiveness has to be understood in the following way. I have to prove that there was no injury in me. The injury is past. And I can get back on track without accusing you of being the cause of my sickness, of my injury.
That's going to be very difficult for a lot of people who are carrying around a lot of hurt. So what you're saying is grudges, resentments, and even forgiveness that's not the most well-intentioned forgiveness or not a complete forgiveness can manifest itself in physical and mental disease.
It's becoming physical. It's in our bodies, you know, the lack of forgiveness and true vengeance, you know what? So that's important to understand that our attitudes in life are crucially important to let go, and emotions are hitting in the body. We are like a car. Let me explain what it is. A car has a power system and a guidance system. The guidance system is the steering wheel and the front wheels, and the power system is the engine. If the both systems are functioning properly, then we can go anywhere you want, LA, Chicago, we get there. If one system fails, we either want to go to a certain place, but we are stuck because there's no power, okay?
Or we're if going the wrong direction.
Exactly. Okay. Or if the power is there and the guidance is lost, we cannot go. We cannot get anywhere. So we are the same. Our guidance system is our thought, okay? Our thought. I want to be healthy. It's your thought. But if this thought is not accompanied by emotion, which is a power system, get you nowhere. So you have to understand the mechanism of sickness. You have to desire something in a certain way, and you have to bring emotion into this desire. Otherwise, it's useless. That's why prayers sometimes don't work.
And the physical choices too, right? Like the physical changes that we can make.
Absolutely. Physical choices are very important, you know, very important because we have to analyze our habits. All habits can be changed. You can start today changing your habits, for instance. You have to analyze with bone-crushing honesty your life and say, well, smoking is bad. Why do I harm myself? Okay, because I have nothing to do. No, you have to. I love my body. I have to give it the best I can. It's my best friend in this life here. I have to give it the best I can. So I choose deliberately to quit smoking because it's a choice. Not I cannot stop it. You can. But you convince yourself by mistake that you cannot stop smoking. You find arguments, reasons for that, okay, which are not really important. So the same with food, the foods. I deliberately choose to look in my cart before I check out with the cashiers, you know, in the whatever store. And I deliberately evaluate all these things I buy from the store, and I decide that this is going to make me gain weight or make me sick. Why do I pay money to get myself sick?
So it's okay to impulse buy, but when you get to the cashier, then you reevaluate and
exactly.
Say, I don't think I'm going to have this after all.
And you can easily do it. Don't think, I cannot do it. No, you can do it, but you choose not to do it.
I like what you say about forgiveness, because it seems like the people who automatically forgive, you know, are thinking that they're doing something healthy for themselves. And I never buy it. I never believe it. I believe that forgiveness is a process. You have to incorporate and you have to fully sense the injury and feel the injury before you can volitionally go forward to another person and say, okay, I'm letting this go. To me, forgiveness is a let go. It's a letting go.
Absolutely. Let go and let go. And finally, you can heal yourself if you forgive like this.
Tell us about reprogramming, like the hemisync and the reprogramming of the subconscious mind that is driven to drive us in unhealthy directions often.
All right. So our life, obviously, is not run by our conscious mind. It's only 7%. We are run by our subconscious mind. It is crucial to understand.
So that 7%, is that like when people say we only use 10% of our brains?
Yes, exactly. Because we think we are in control. Guess what? We are not in control fully because we are in control. Our previous choices are controlling us. Give an example. If I, for instance, I choose between an apple and a pear, I choose an apple, for instance. No. The choice is already made from my previous choices in my life. So that's why the subconscious mind will kick in immediately. It's being shown by functional MRI that actually the subconscious structures are going to light up first before the conscious mind takes over and chooses the apple. Mm-hmm. It's very clear. It's very clear. It's like daylight.
And we see that in the brain's activity.
Absolutely. It lights up. It's like a Christmas tree, you know. So we have to understand our ability to control our subconscious mind. We can do it. Yeah. We can start from today, for instance.
Well, it sounds like you do that when you go to the cashier.
You start with the small steps.
To the conscious mind.
Small steps first. We're not savants, you know. We're small steps first, taking to the first level, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm in control. And guess what? We are much more in control than we think about our life, you know. So it's why we can take first steps first, you know, food and sleep habits, okay? Then we can ask advice how to proceed further. That's important with a subconscious mind.
Before we got on the air, we were discussing in the studio, and you said something that really left an impact on me. You said when you were talking about how we only have 7% of our brain is in the conscious sphere, the other 93% operates subconsciously.
Correct.
And you said if people knew who they truly were, they would cry, but not out of sadness. What did you mean by that?
If we knew who you really were, we'd cry for a week. Because we let our powers go away. You know, we thought we're disempowered. We relied on things that are outside of ourselves. We are in total control of our life. Nothing happens to us in this life unless we accept it. We take steps towards that direction, okay? We have to understand it, and we are in full control, but we have to know we are in full control. So the control has to be checked by our subconscious mind, because I can stop it, patients tell me. So how do you do that? How do you get control? Knowing that you can change your subconscious mind is the first step. Knowing that you are exposed to certain thoughts in your mind, which may not be yours, is another step to take. Okay, how do we do that? If you know, for instance, that I have only bad thoughts in my mind, somehow is extremely powerful to understand. So how do I get rid of these particular thoughts? Well, it's very simple. Just imagine this room, Kevin, Ben, that is full of balloons. The balloons are actually thoughts we have that are available to us, not our thoughts, available to us only. They are flying around. One thought, for instance, like having a balloon, hits my head, comes in my mind, and I become aware of it. So once I become aware of it, I say, this is a bad thought. I choose to let it go. And I wrap this thought around another balloon and pull it out of my head. Get out of my head. I don't like you. Okay, I choose a deliberate different thought which is positive. Life is great. I'm on the beach. I see palm trees. I feel so good. Yeah. So I don't let my mind vacant to be conquered by bad thoughts all the time.
And we want to say that this can be done. I mean, I know people out there are wondering, like, can you really control your thoughts? Can you really look at your thoughts? And actually, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy is all about looking and examining at your thoughts. If you're caught in a trap of constantly catastrophizing and thinking the worst is going to happen, I mean, these are thoughts that you're having. You can, and it's been studied, and there's been tremendous success with taking one thought at a time and standing in the observer position and evaluate it and replace it with, you know, a more realistic or functional thought.
It's a good point, Kevin. I mean, I can almost hear the skeptics out there yelling at their radios.
Yeah. but it's proven. It's guaranteed.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very
empowering concept that we can use to actually change our thoughts, change our mentality, and experience a different outcome in life.
But if you're having trouble, there is a thing called hemisync.
Hemisync, yes.
That can help.
So absolutely. All right. In our office here, we are promoting something very important. We want patients to experience, not only just to talk about, a certain state of peace, which can be acquired only if you are isolating yourself completely from outside world, you know. So we have to know what relaxation is. Only in this state of relaxation, the body can heal itself, no other way. So once we understand it, we can use, for instance, these machines we have in our office here, headphones and certain images, which are going to influence our energy fields and brain waves. We can make our brain waves to be much slower, as if we are deeply relaxed. Forcefully we do that, and then you can have a state of peace which you never experienced before. So this is a very experiential thing, okay? So very good. In this way, we can show people how to be relaxed, how to experience peace, and get physically better.
And I mean, the way that I've experienced this hemisync is that it relaxes me so much that I am able to see when a thought comes in. Some people try to do meditation, and they're so frustrated they can't really get there. They don't get to the calm and the peace.
That's correct. That's correct.
But I've done the hemisync, and the hemisync really at least gets me to the place where I can see my impulses, I can see the urges, and I can see the thoughts. And I think that that's a starting place.
That's a great point, Kevin. In the interest of time, we are running right up against the end of the show. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Remember, in the words of George Clinton, change your mind and you can change your relationship to time. So I want to thank you, Dr. Enescu, for
being
here.
Thank you very much for having me here.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
Kevin, I want to thank you as always. You can always send us an email here, positivemind@wbai.org. We wanted to get to phone calls today, but we just kind of had so much content that we didn't get there. But you can reach Dr. Enescu by sending us an email or by calling us at 212-757-4488. And remember, you can always support BAI, help us cut down on the length and frequency of future fund drives by going to WBAI.org and clicking on Ways to Donate, Become a BAI Buddy. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be back same time tomorrow right here on WBAI. And stay tuned for the Artsy Fartsy Show with Barika Edwards.